Hello and welcome to the Shogun Steakhouse. I am John Blackthorne. I will be serving you today. May I take your order, please?
Oh, wait, just kidding. Actually, this is Patrick Macias, and this is episode 87 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
And I'm Matt Ault, author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And I'm extremely surprised that you aren't Duke Sanada. You sounded just like him there. Actually, sorry, the Blackthorne is now being played by, what is his name? Cosmo
Jones. High school weed dealer Cosmo Jones.
He's doing a good job. He's doing a great job. He doesn't quite have the gravitas of the manly men who played the masculine characters in the 1980s Shogun, like, say, I don't know, Orson Welles.
What?
Could I have just one more take of that?
Sir? Why? I just did it right. Yeah. I'm not used to having more than one person in there. One more word out of you and you go. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
I take directions from one person under protest, but from two, I don't sit still. But who the hell are you anyway?
This podcast is off to a roaring start already.
Hey, man, my mindset is purely in the Sengoku era of warring states of Japan. But there's plenty of stuff to talk about today, I believe. Is there not?
There's definitely some war here and some states of confusion in the news this week. First of all, this announcement kind of came out of nowhere, but I'm glad it was well-timed because it says here, Neon Genesis Evangelion creator Hideaki Anno to lead Space Battleship Yamato's 50th anniversary project.
Space Battleship Yamato? Is that like the Japanese knockoff of Star Blazers?
Something like that, yeah. I can't believe it's been 50 years since we went off to outer space to save the human race.
It is time to go, we know, from the Earth that we love so, and the cruiser which is cold, Yamato.
They had a great theme song. I think it was actually an inspiration on the English language Macross theme that I won't play this episode, I promise.
What percentage of this podcast has been taken up by us playing the English version of the Macross theme song?
About 3 hours, I think.
You know, all joshing aside, this is actually a really big deal in the sense, there's several big deals conspiring into a greater deal here, I believe. I mean, Yamato is, you wouldn't have modern day anime fandom without Yamato, period. Full stop, end of discussion. It was like the first big happeningu, as the Japanese might say, in the kind of grown-ups, you should be not watching anime, but you are watching anime. We can make money off this big sea change of the 70s. Plus, I think you've seen this show before, Patrick, right?
It's the anime that made me. I think I'd seen Speed Racer and Battle of the Planets before, but Star Blazers like made me go to Japantown and like dig for anime books and like seek out trader circles. And like, I really went hard into Yamato and Star Blazers. It is the one that everyone has, like that one that really turned them into a, you know, screaming chocolate and pizza stained otaku, and Star Blazers was it for me. And not just me, also this guy Hideaki Anno, quote, he didn't think his life would be the same if he hadn't have encountered Space Battleship Yamato.
It is really interesting to me to go back and interview old otaku, you know, like professionals who are in their 50s or early 60s now, and the way they talk about Yamato is so reverential. So like, it was so life-changing for so many people here. I think you could argue even more so than Star Wars was in the States, because Star Wars was kind of a fad, but like Yamato inspired huge numbers of people to kind of not only dedicate their lives to kind of anime, but also it inspired a lot of people to get into anime. You had all of these people who were like so into it that they decided to make it their career. Anno is, of course, the kind of shining star of that. He is kind of at the forefront of people who were like, you know, nerds turned pro, who started making art for other nerds rather than for society at large. And of course, there's like Macross is the big, I think that's the first major production that was largely comprised of people like that, young people who were inspired by anime, not inspired by animation.
Well, Anno worked on Macross, the original TV series, under Noboru Ishiguro, the director of Yamato. So there's this direct linkage from the Yamato generation to the Macross generation. And it's only like an 8-year difference between the two. So you have the debut of Yamato in 74, and then like the Macross Macross movie in 84. And you can just see how much anime has evolved in that time. It's really incredible.
Well, not only evolved, but also like you can trace the threads back from Macross to Yamato. They're pretty clearly like the apocalyptic setting, you know, the fighting of these like aliens who massively outnumber us and you know, have much higher technology than we do. I think it's telling that Anno, I think he took the lead on most of the kind of destruction of Earth scenes. Like he was the kind of go-to guy for apocalypse for a while there in the anime industry, right? He did the Nausicaa, the god soldier, like lasering across the horizon and blowing up all of the Omu and Nausicaa too. He had his finger on the pulse of what blew stuff up. But what I was trying to say earlier is when Matsumoto Reiji, who didn't create Yamato, but you would be forgiven for thinking he did because he turned like Nishizaki's original concept into like, you know, he changed the art, he changed the direction, he changed everything. When I talked to people like Shinji Aramaki and Ryusuke Hikawa, who is like the head of one of the early Yamato fan clubs in the 70s, and they were just talking about what like the impact it was. They turned on the TV, they didn't know what to expect, and suddenly like Earth is hanging red and like desolate in the cosmos, and it's like the most horrifically beautiful thing they'd ever seen. It was like ecstasy for this entire generation of Japanese people who saw Matsumoto Reiji's art and work for the first time. Obviously you too.
I think the big hook for me as a kid and a lot of us was the fact that it was a continuing storyline.
Yeah.
That didn't happen to Popeye. That didn't happen to Chili Willy. I think even Jason the Wheeled Warriors, Matt, you can watch those episodes out of order and it's going nowhere, right? But in Yamato, they only have 365 days to save the Earth. Every episode, there's like that countdown that would keep me up at night. I'd wake up sweating. Oh my God, Matt, are they going to make it? Are they going to make it back in time? It added that element of like drama and continuity that really you just did not get in, what would they call it, children's animation back then?
Nishizaki came up with the idea for Yamato and then hired Matsumoto Reiji as just kind of like an art guy. And then Matsumoto sort of, in a great way, hijacked the entire thing. And like, I think he rewrote big parts of the story too, correct?
Well, yeah, everything really began to change. There was the original plan that would include Captain Harlock.
Right.
Another Matsumoto character as Derek Wildstar's older brother that didn't really pan out. Yeah, he began to kind of remake the story in his own image.
So when I wrote the obituary for Matsumoto a year ago for the New Yorker, which was kind of, I was kind of amazed they agreed to it. It was pretty awesome, you know, to see Matsumoto Reiji's name in the New Yorker. But I wish it could have been for a better reason than him having passed away. I interviewed a lot of people like Shinji Aramaki from, you know, Appleseed, directing Appleseed fame and directing Captain Harlock fame. And I interviewed Hikawa Ryusuke, who is like the big early, one of the big early like super fans of Yamato, and he founded one of the early Yamato fan clubs that was kind of like a prototype of all of the internet fandom you see today. Like they would, you know, have meetings and like send notes after class and like all sorts of stuff and like go pound on the door of animation studios and get sales and things. They both were talking about how much it just impacted people in general. And they also both talked about, you know, Matsumoto's female characters, of course, like Meiteru. Well, Meiteru is obviously from 999, but you know, Starsha of Iskandar and things like that. I don't know. Starsha was like a huge influence on me as a kid too. I was like,
what does that mean, Matt?
No, in animation, Western animation, like her, none, zero, I think you could say.
Disney princess-esque to a certain extent, like a Sleeping Beauty kind of a thing, maybe? I don't know.
Kind of. What was the thing that Shinji Aramaki, it's in the New Yorker piece, but he's like, less like a lover and like an idealized image of love itself or something like that. And I was like, wow.
Again, this didn't happen on the Flintstones or Top Cat.
No.
Or Quick Draw McGraw. They didn't really have characters like that.
Although, like, the Chili Willy extended universe, I mean... Actually, I think all of those are. That would be the Hanna-Barbera extended universe.
Yeah,
I
don't want to hear about your extended Chili Willy right now, Matt. It's a little too early in the morning, okay?
You had to go there, Patrick. He's just a little penguin. And this is actually making it worse now that I'm trying to clarify this.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Before we get too ahead of ourselves and excited for this Anno-Yamato collaboration, which I think everyone is assuming is going to be some kind of anime project, if you read the fine print on this announcement, it says the bulk of the anniversary project will be a series of books to commemorate this highly influential anime series. There's going to be an anniversary screening event on October 6, 2024. There might be a surprise up Anno's sleeve to deliver some kind of new anime, but they're in the middle of like an anime remake of Yamato already. It's like the Holy Grail. It's like, yeah, we've already got one. How many Yamato remakes do you need?
They've been doing that whole Yamato 2202. I can't even keep them straight.
227 with Marla Gibbs. Is it something like that?
I enjoy the concept of those remade Yamato series because they look so good, but I was never really able to get into them in the same way I was able to get into the original Yamato. And I feel bad about this. I feel kind of like alone because all of my Japanese, you know, otaku, for lack of a better word, adult anime friends are obsessed with the Yamato remake. Were you a fan?
I tried to watch it and it was just a bunch of like weightless CGI ships like zipping around. You watch those old anime from like 50 years ago now, there's a sense of like weight and size to the spaceships. I don't get it. It's worse now.
I don't know. It just didn't resonate with me as much as it did with Tim Eldred. I'm sure it did resonate with Tim Eldred. I actually haven't talked to him about it. Yamato super fan.
The thing is, there's all these clickbait articles announcing, you know, this sort of like Yamato Anno collaboration, and they're all using art from the remake because they don't know that there's an original series. They don't know what the original series looks like.
Right.
It's like the post Star Blazers inmates have taken over the prison. They just do a search for Star Blazers or Yamato, and they grab the first thing they see. The real tragedy of this is that Star Blazers, the original Yamato series, and even, you know, the Star Blazers adaptation are not in print in North America.
Is this similar to how like Macross has been erased? The original Macross has been erased in the United States?
I'm going to say it's the same thing. It's the same situation. Yeah. Even if you wanted to watch the original series, I don't know what you have to do, who you have to kill. You have to go on the dark web and like meet a guy with like a briefcase full of VHS tapes.
Is his name Cosmo Jones? That's a relic of how, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, Japanese production companies didn't realize the value. I mean, they knew the value of what they had and that they'd made something awesome, but like they didn't realize the global value of it and signed these horrifically lopsided contracts with predatory Western companies. And it happened again and again and again from the 60s through the 90s, I think. And it's why so many of these pivotal classic series like Yamato, like Macross, are not widely available or as available as they should be.
Yeah, it really sucks. I have an idea as we approach the 50th anniversary. Maybe we can get Tim Eldred on the show, Yamato superfan, and have him tell us about the rights situation. I want to know. He was briefly involved with the company that put out the official Yamato DVDs like 20 years ago now, like a long time ago, baby. That was the last time it was available legally.
That's like a generation. It hasn't been available for a generation. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, for real. And it's the 50th anniversary and everyone's assuming Anno is going to do some kind of like magical anime remake, but maybe it's just going to be a book with the same old photos.
You know, I am all for nerds following their passions in their later years and like doing their passion projects and things like that. But can I even say this without getting in trouble? Like, Anno is so close to this, and I'm almost a little bit scared if he makes, you know, Anno Yamato, because I love him. I love him to death. I love his work. But I found like the last Kamen Rider film, like Kamen Rider is probably his other formative influence, I think you can say, right? Like Yamato and Kamen Rider, they're kind of like the matter and antimatter of his creative lifeblood. And I found that a little bit insider baseball, if I might say. So like, you know, I wonder how he would handle a Yamato. Would it really be something that would appeal to a lot of people? Would it be something that only appeals to fans?
Yeah, if you want like an incoherent like mess of a live action Yamato movie, you can watch Takashi Yamazaki's terrible, unwatchable live action Yamato movie from like 15
Patrick,
years ago.
It's like Battlestar Yamato Galactica. Did I pronounce that right?
The best way to celebrate the 50th anniversary is not to remake it. Just watch the old series. Watch the old one again. A lot of people haven't seen it now. Let's start sweating to the oldies a little bit, you know?
Is this the educational part of the podcast that we have to put in so the FCC will let us broadcast it in like the in the children's like broadcasting hour? Now you know.
They'll let us broadcast it on Channel Zero, cold looking for that hero.
Speaking of Strong Zero, I think that's a good pivot into our next topic, is it not? About how fake Japanese whiskey is being flooding the market and now being driven away by government intervention.
Okay, hit me with it.
You may know or you may not know that Japanese whiskey is a big thing around the world. April today, and it's being sold at huge markups. And when you have something that is driven by name, brand, status, and is going for a lot of money, you are going to get people trying to break the rules and sell things that aren't that to make money for free.
Are you talking about bootleg Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Matt?
I'm talking about, it's not bootleg, but there's a lot of stuff that's labeled as Japanese whiskey out there, but it is actually made in like Scotland and just imported to Japan, and they slap a Japanese label on it that sounds something like Japanesque, like Yamato whiskey or something. I'm just making that up. And then they sell it as Japanese whiskey and it's not. And the Japanese government has finally decided to crack down on this. This is like how the French government has cracked down. You can only call champagne, you know, the bubbly, you know, sparkling wine from the Champagne region is the only thing that can be called champagne. Now, only stuff that is distilled in Japan can be called Japanese whiskey. And there's going to be a label. And it's going to have your face on it, Patrick. That's what the emperor announced. I'm just kidding about that last part. But I am stone cold serious and even a little sober talking about this labeling. So from now on, there was like a 3-year grace period. They announced this 3 years back. But now the gates are closing. Fake news Japanese whiskey is no longer going to be allowed to leave the borders of Japan.
Wow. How is that going to drive up the prices in the collector's market and even like the duty free places?
Yeah, it's a problem. You know, the reason Japanese whiskey is so damn expensive is because there's so little of it, because none of it was like Japanese whiskey wasn't in decline for years. It was in decline for decades leading up to like the 21st century. No Japanese distillery thought that there was going to be a boom like happened starting in the aughts and accelerating in the 20-teens. And now we're in like Aqua Teen Hunger Force. But whatever the case is, none of the distilleries were expecting this. So they were just like going out of business. And like there wasn't any stock. And the problem with whiskey is you have to like leave it in barrels for years to age it. Like there's no way to speed that up. So even now they do know what's going on. There's like a huge shortage of the juice, as they call it in the industry. The juice is loose. So it's tough. But now thank goodness, thank protoculture, they're putting a label on the bottle so you can tell real Japanese whiskey from fake Japanese whiskey. This has been another educational moment for the kids for the kids out there.
The kids who don't drink anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is really going to be apocalypse now. I mean, they're going to ban Strong Zero. They're going to make it impossible to get Japanese whiskey. I mean, what's left, honestly?
Really? Yeah, Yamato's not streaming anywhere. I mean, Macross isn't streaming anywhere. Who knew that this apocalypse would come to pass?
But it gets worse, Matt. More bad news. Okay, hang on to your hats. Foreign residents prohibited from participating in Yu-Gi-Oh! Championships.
One of the most popular competitive card games in Japan is limiting participants to Japanese nationals. According to the rules of participation published by Konami, the organizers of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Japan Championship 2024, eligible participation is limited only to nationals of Japan. The Japanese nationality requirement means that foreign residents of Japan are barred from the Japan Championship and its feeder competitions. In other words, citizens of foreign countries who are legally living in Japan, either by nature of working in a Japanese workplace, attending a Japanese school, or marriage to a Japanese resident, cannot participate in the competition.
What? I had my deck already and everything. That's racist. What's going on?
Let me get this straight, Matt. It's legal to buy it. It's legal to own it. If you're the proprietor of a hash bar, it's legal to sell it. But you can't play Yu-Gi-Oh! Even if you have a spousal visa, even if you have permanent residency? What is going on?
Loophole, pal. I'm going to Kobayashi Maru this. I'm going to send in my wife to play.
Do we need to hire like special Yu-Gi-Oh! Lawyers to like make this possible? I don't understand.
So Yu-Gi-Oh! So for those of you who, many of you listening to this have probably never played Yu-Gi-Oh! Or done anything, it's one of those Shonen Jump based battle manga that like involved the protagonist. He was a kid who played all sorts of games, but they introduced like this fictional card game in this series. And that's when the manga really took off and became like a massive, massive, massive hit. Like Yu-Gi-Oh! Is one of the big money earning franchises for Shonen Jump. Like it's up there alongside like Kimetsu no Yaiba, Demon Slayer, and you know, Dragon Ball and stuff like that. It's just like a earner for all of its assorted merchandise, which is to say the card game. It's like a fictional card game that became a real card game that took off like on Pokemon levels of success. And it's been around for a while. When Yu-Gi-Oh! Debuted in, wait a second. I'm going to go to my only source for news, Wikipedia. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a Japanese manga series written and illustrated by Kazuki Takahashi. It was serialized and Shueisha's Weekly Shonen Jump magazine between, oh my God, September 1996, Patrick, almost 30 years ago, and March 2000. It actually ended in 2004. It ended 20 years ago. It ended you old. You're so old. We're so old. God, we're Yugi old? Is that our new podcast name? Anyway, yes, Yugi Muto, who solves the ancient millennium puzzle. He awakens a gambling alter ego or spirit within his body. You know, that's what I told the cops. You know what they called
it? I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
It was my gambling alter ego or spirit that had been awakened within my body and solves my conflicts using various games. Yes, a media franchise par excellence, but apparently we can't play. Patrick. God.
Now, I have to say something, Matt. I have a confession to make. I actually went to the Yu-Gi-Oh! World Championships like 15 years ago when they were held in Japan. I was covering it like Hunter S. Thompson for Shonen Jump. And it was amazing. It was actually really wild seeing like little Japanese kids playing against like teenage dirtbags and stoners from like Western countries from all over the world. It really did like cross ages and boundaries, but not gender, at least not back then. It was the He-Man Woman Haters Club, I think is I believe what they're known as. And it was pretty awesome. Someone I met there said she'd heard horror stories about like little kids in Japan, like stealing fine family fortunes and spending them on Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And it was just like, it is destroying the fabric of Japanese society one card at a time. To a certain extent, there's a temptation to sort of ban this kind of thing, like banning rap music.
Right,
or something.
Right. And also wasn't it kind of like a post Pokemon thing a little bit? Like I know it kind of debuted around the same time. There were so many of these card games that debuted around the time Pokemon did. Yu-Gi-Oh was, you know, one of the more successful. It wasn't even a copier. Right? It was just kind of, there was like
its own thing. Yeah.
There was something in the air, you know, maybe it's like post Magic the Gathering, post, you know, Pokemon, like everything had to be a card game. Why is there not a pure Tokyo Scope, the card game?
And then we can set up a law so we can't actually play it ourselves, because even if we have spousal visas or permanent residency, this is really messed up. I hope this is not a precedent. Like if they suddenly
banned... You were so mad about this. You're so mad. It is odd. I wonder, have you gone and told them you're very okota, and have you asked, I mean, do we know why they're banning like residents of Japan? Like what is going on?
We don't know why. There must be a heck of a story. This must be some kind of conspiracy. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, we need to get to the bottom of this. And you know, there's no way we can solve this. You know, we're not the Bloodhound Gang. We need a little more time than they do, the 5 minutes they got in every episode of 3-2-1 Contact to solve a crime. We need to figure this out. And I am going to look into this, and I will report back. I'm going to look into the Japanese media.
Okay.
I'm going to play my cards and see what I can find
out. In the meantime, I'm going to disguise myself as a humble Japanese fisherman like James Bond in You Only Live Twice and sneak into the Yu-Gi-Oh! World Tournament and bring home the gold for the foreign residents and the people with visas and stuff like that. Doesn't seem fair, you know?
Yeah, fight for us, Patrick. Fight for us.
I fight for love. But there's a related Yu-Gi-Oh! Story we have in the hopper this week. Check this one out, Matt. Suspect at large after theft of Yu-Gi-Oh! Card worth 5 million yen.
The Tokyo police are searching for a man who allegedly stole a prized Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading card valued at 5 million yen, about $33,700, from a Tokyo store on Wednesday afternoon. According to the police, the suspect, who appeared to be in his early 20s and was wearing a black jacket and black pants, entered the store near Akihabara Station in Chiyoda Ward alone at around 4 p.m. He asked a store employee to present the highly valued card, which had been contained in a display case, and surreptitiously pocketed the item before exiting the premises unnoticed. He then got into a car parked near the shop. The employee promptly alerted the police by phone.
Wow, 5 million yen. You know what you can buy for 5 million yen?
I have a question for you, Matt. Where were you a week ago around 4 p.m.? Were you in the Chiyoda Ward? Were you near Akihabara Station?
Okay, listen, I don't like to talk about this publicly, but I solved a millennium puzzle and it awakened a gambling alter ego or spirit within my body that solves my conflicts using various games. And I think this may have been one such example of that alter ego or spirit manifesting. By the way, do you want to go out to a 5 million yen? Do you want to go out to a 5 million yen steak dinner? I won't tell you how I came into that 5 million yen.
I heard there's been an uptick in crime in Akihabara since all the tourists came back. There's been kind of people saying there's more ripoffs and scams. You know, they have all those like maid touts and stuff. And now there's just like straight up smash and grab criminals going on, Matt.
Well, there's always been kind of smash and grab stuff happening in Japan. I don't even remember, 10 years ago, there was a big smash and grab of like diamonds in the Ginza, which is like the kind of stuff you expect to get stolen. But, you know, if like a little piece of paper is worth 5 million yen, which is like, what, $10 in U.S. money now with the really crappy exchange rate? It's 150 yen to the dollar. So what is that? I guess that would be something like $40,000 or something like that. The crazy thing is the shopkeeper, if I'm understanding this article right, took the actual card out and like let this guy hold it. Like, can you imagine if like a 40,000, nobody lets me handle anything that's worth $40,000, not even $40,000. I don't know. Anyway, it seems like there was just a lot of bad judgment happening all around in this particular case.
If only there had been a couple of lethal enforcers in Akihabara with like their justifier guns, like the good guys with the guns can stop the bad guys with the Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Like Narc, like we were walking around wearing like a big like life preserver with like a laser pistol blowing up junkies. Yes, if only, Patrick, if only. But it sounds like it was a Japanese person who did this. Like they're not saying it was foreign people or not.
Maybe it was a foreigner who was disguised as a humble Japanese fisherman, Matt.
You know, you already blew the lid off your own modus operandi there. I can't believe it. Yeah, but you know, I was just in Akihabara the other day. I was killing some time. I was in the Tamashii Nation store, and it was like America East. It was like all foreign people in there, except the clerks and stuff were like, buy this, buy this, buy this. I don't know. Akihabara is getting a little wild and woolly these days. Think about how much things have changed. It used to be at the turn of the millennium, it was like, what was it, Oyaji Gari, where like all of the young people were like jumping like otaku salarymen who were in Akihabara.
Yeah, otaku gari is what they called it.
Otaku gari, that's what it was.
Otaku hunting, is that, am I getting that correct?
Otaku hunting, yes. And now they're hunting for Yu-Gi-Oh! So it's just how times change.
Times really are changing in this last story here, Matt. There's a tear in my beer. Shinjuku Alta commercial facility to close in February 2025.
Shinjuku Alta, which has been a popular landmark and meeting spot in front of the east exit of Shinjuku Station in Tokyo since it first opened in 1980, will cease operations at the end of February next year. Shinjuku Alta's official website announced they will cease operations on Friday, February 28, 2025. Their statement read, "We would like to express our sincere gratitude to our customers for their continued patronage over the years, and we sincerely apologize for any inconvenience caused by the closure of our business."
Yeah, that's a sad one. I mean, it's not like either of us have camped out and watched that screen anytime recently, but man, what a Tokyo like icon, like a landscape icon. It's in so many anime series too, right?
I think in the pre-cell phone era, that's what you said. You'd say, meet me at Alta if you were in Shinjuku. That was the meeting spot. People still do meet out there. I know that because I go to Alta like twice a month these days because they have the HMV record store inside.
Right.
By the way, if you go there, don't buy any post-punk or 12-inch hip-hop. That all belongs to me. Just stay in the city pop. Just stay in the city pop area. Stay away from the used records. Buy the new stuff. But I go there all the time. And I was actually on my way to go to Alta when I heard this news. And I was just like shocked. And of course, I, you know, took a look around the stores and there was no one inside, Matt. There was no funeral procession.
I'm trying to remember. I definitely met someone at Alta. But the last time I used that as a meeting spot, it has to be 10 years ago now. I mean, there was 5 years there during, you know, the coronavirus epidemic that I didn't even leave my house. So there was no need to meet anybody. But you're totally right. You know, Tokyo used to be defined by spots that people used to meet one another. Now, basically, the only physical meeting spot anybody ever uses or remembers is Hachiko in Shibuya. But, you know, back the first time I came to Japan was in like 1990. And then I lived here for a year around like 1993-94, I think it was. And nobody had cell phones back then. Nobody had them. You know, only the Kogals had pocket pagers or whatever. You had to use the phone booths to get a hold of each other. And yeah, it was all like Almond in Roppongi. It was Alta in Shinjuku. You know, it was Hachiko or the Moai statue, the late lamented Moai statue in Shibuya.
The thing about Alta is it's like one of the first like Tokyo landmarks that I knew about purely through anime. The first time I saw it was probably in the anime Megazone 2-3.
Right. Yeah.
It's featured very prominently. There's like a big jumbo screen music video sequence. And then I would see in anime books, they would debut trailers. There was like a big trailer reveal for Be Forever Yamato in 1980 when Alta opened. And they had a big event. They had all these people out there in front of the station square. And of course, that spot is like prime real estate, east exit there in Shinjuku. That's where they had the 1-1 scale gunhead appearance when the movie premiered. That's where they had the new anime century declaration.
Yeah, yeah. That was the Gundam event that kind of really kicked off that like turbocharged anime fandom. Yeah, that's a, it's a storied, you know, place in the Tokyo landscape, that that entire east side of Shinjuku Station. And those Jumbotron TVs for a while, like, really define Japan's cutting edge, like, technopia, especially Tokyo's, like, the impression that it had around the world as a technopolis. That was the first one. Then, like, that one went up in Shibuya. I can't remember what the order of the Jumbotrons was, but when Alta went up, it was incredibly high tech, right? Like, it was like, wow, a big TV. It's not like a projector. It's like a giant LCD LED screen.
It looks pretty tiny in comparison to what they have now, like, pretty much at every major station around Tokyo. But what's really crazy is right next to Alta now is that darn 3D cat video projection screen.
Yes.
And everyone's looking at that. Everyone comes out of the station and their head all turns, you know, like several feet to the left. And it's the cat. It's the cat. No one cares about Alta anymore. Alta seems really dead inside. It seems like it's been gutted by like fast fashion and like Daiso. All they need to do is put in like a Pokemon store or a Nintendo store inside and just count the loot cakes.
Well, probably the building itself needs to be knocked down for like, you know, earthquake standards or something like that. But yeah, you know, it's funny you bring up the cat because those kind of wraparound faux 3D screens, like mid-pandemic, they started popping up all over Tokyo. And now there's two or three of them in Shibuya. You know, one's on quote unquote basketball street slash center guy. There's another one like kind of around the corner from that. What, where do those come from? And just like all of a sudden these wraparound giant like HD screens showed up. I don't know that I like them better than the old school Jumbotrons.
A lot of people in Japan are posting their Shinjuku Alta memories. It is a real. If you're like an oldie like us, this is not a goodie.
Well, it's super bubbly. You know what I mean? Like it went up in 1980. So it really paralleled that entire bubble era of Japan's rise as an economic force, as a, you know, a technological force, as a fantasy force, as some might write about. So it's really like it's kind of freighted with memories. I just hope when they take it down, can I get it? Can I like I can put it in my backyard or something so I can play Atari 2600 on it, please?
Oh no, I'm going to be chaining myself to the door because I don't want that HMV to close, dude. I mean, I love that place.
It's funny. I went to a concert last night. I went to go see Beck. Beck came to Tokyo and he played
Beck's Coffee Shop and Burgers.
Beck the Coffee Shop? No, Beck the Manga? No, I think it was Beck the Beck. Beck LeBeck? No, Beck Hansen. What is his actual name?
Beck Hansen. Yeah.
Beck Hansen. Beck Hansen of Loser and Odelay.
Oh, you mean Sex Laws?
Sex Laws. I want to know the logic of your sex laws. Yes. It was cool. It was all like he showed up in like slacks and a blazer. He looked a lot like an elderly Jesse Eisenberg. He played a very cool set of new and old tunes on his acoustic guitar.
Did he do anything for Midnight Vultures?
He did not. He didn't do anything for Midnight. Well, actually, he did a girl. What is that song? Girl? Is that from Midnight Vultures? Which one is that? I don't even remember.
Does he sing it like Prince? Is it like, I want to get with you?
Yeah. Well, he's like, okay, everybody sing along. And he's like singing these like super high notes that like no normal human being
can sing.
He sang
that. He did Deborah from Midnight Vultures. That's my favorite.
He did Loser on an acoustic guitar, which I thought was kind of fun. At one point he stopped and he's like, I haven't been in Japan in like 6 years because of the pandemic and everything. And damn, there's a lot of Americans around. What's up with that?
Does he mean white people? I'm just asking, Matt. Just asking questions.
Sorry. That was actually the first concert I had gone to in like 5 years. Why didn't he stream it on the Alta TV? That's what I should have raised my hand. Mr. Beck, I have a question.
I can't remember the last band I saw. It's been so long, like post pre-pandemic. I think it was Buck Tick. I can now tell my grandkids I saw Buck Tick live before the lead singer died.
You didn't see Hatsune Miku live? The Beck was great. I think everybody was over 50, so it was like a really perfect concert from including Beck. So it was perfect. Yeah, so, oh man, like crime over Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Yamato crashing to Earth again, and the UltraVision screen. I heard, is it true they're gonna hire somebody in a giant Godzilla suit to smash the building down instead of like dismantling it with construction equipment? Is that true?
There's gonna be a lot of construction. It sounds like the people who own the real estate, what is that, Seibu Isetan, own that whole area?
Somebody like that, yeah.
They're gonna rebuild probably like a monstrous, boring glass building like they do with everything else in areas.
Yeah, it's, you know, I haven't been here. You don't get that insane bubble era architecture architecture like you used to, you know? I miss it. You were getting more like kind of, I don't know, it's just, what do you call it? Like mall
generic?
Standard? Mall standard? Oh, wait a second. What do they say about it online? This 8-floor shopping complex is squarely aimed at the girly fashion crowd. Wait a second, Patrick. What are they saying about you? What are they saying about here?
See, don't tell them about the HMV. Just keep that a secret. Just like...
Is the HMV literally hidden behind that screen?
It's hidden on the 6th floor. There's no one even on the 2nd floor of that place, Matt. Again, it's like a ghost town inside.
It's too bad. So does that mean you can sneak in and like swap the RCA cables out? Yeah. Are there like giant RCA cables that are like hooked to an equally giant VCR for the screen?
There's a whole TV studio inside. They used to have that TV show. Was it Warate Itomo? Used to broadcast from there like every day.
Yeah.
So they used to film a TV show inside Alta and they would like simulcast it on the AltaVision screen. And there's times where like people outside were going berserk because they would have like, you know, the guys from like the boy bands. Now they can look at a 3D cat that just licks its paws and says meow.
Incredibly, there's no English Wikipedia for Studio Alta. Are you sitting down? I'm going to drop some reading this right now. It says, the name Alta is derived from the English word alternative. Are you shocked? Are you surprised?
Wow, not Matt Alta, the evil gambling spirit that exists inside of you?
I thought so too. I was going to sue, but then I decided I was just going to, you know, steal Yu-Gi-Oh cards instead to show my displeasure. Yeah, famous logo designer designed it. I'm looking at this, the 3-colored logo. The logo is pretty awesome. The studio in blue, and then like you have the different letters for ALTA. I think they swapped the screen out a couple times too. Like it's not the exact same screen that went up in 1980. It went up, actually it debuted on March 26, 1980. So it was, you know, we're kind of around the anniversary of it right now.
Wow. Yeah, the original screen was not in color. It was kind of like brown goldish. It was a pre-color television. I think they show it in Godzilla 1985. I think there's a scene where they're warning people about Godzilla and they use the old AltaVision.
Anyway, end of an era.
Maybe one last time we should throw away our cell phones and see if we can meet each other at Alta without any drama.
We should totally do that. We should actually broadcast live from underneath Studio Alta. What, do we know exactly when it's coming down?
It's going to be February 2025 is the final day.
Is this what Daft Punk's One More Time is about? Meeting at Studio Alta one more time before a giant wrecking ball smashes through it?
ヨドバシカメラでは最新型人気商品スーパーディスカウント実施中。ニコンF3、キヤノンF1、ジェンザブロニカをはじめ、ずらり揃ったブランドカメラはもちろん、ビデオラジカセ時計などなど、もうすべて安い。よしのどんどん安く、新宿西口ヨドバシカメラ。 Well, Matt, we've had a lot of fun today on the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast, but there's nothing funny about not being able to play Yu-Gi-Oh! At the World Championships next year.
I still say you can sneak in as a humble Japanese fisherman, Patrick. I'm all for it. I'll support you in that. But if, you know, assuming you're not in jail for illegally playing Yu-Gi-Oh! In the tournament, I will see you next week for the next episode.
Let's do it. In the meantime, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to our show. Please spread the word.
But until then, we'll take your love. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.